Brishus Harav, I too would like to express my thanks for having me, and especially to Mrs. Julie Schreier for organizing this. Before I begin, I want to just share a feeling that struck me as I came this morning. I met a number of old friends, Mr. Blazer and others, and today is Thanksgiving, and when I was... It's a day where a person could offer thanks. And I was taken aback. I met a number of people, and I asked them, how you're doing? How you doing? And they said, oh, we're okay, we're good. And then they talk a little more. We don't have heat, we lost two cars, we don't have our basement, our farm. And to still say, we're okay, we're good, we're fine, is something that I found very moving. And it really gets to the essence of what we're talking about today. When I was first asked to discuss the topic of Olam Haba, I was a little taken aback. Why Olam Haba? But taking a step back and considering what Olam Haba is, it's something that perhaps is especially important to think about at times like today, times of national tragedy and suffering, as well as local and communal suffering. And that is the following. Olam Haba, in its most basic sense, is about the idea that there is more than the here and now. There's more than that which we see. There's more than this world. We are part of something bigger. Bigger than ourselves, bigger than our world, bigger than the physical universe that we occupy. And that's something that perhaps at times of difficulty we are more apt to remember, and something from which we could draw inspiration. I was asked to speak about Olam Haba, and the first question that I'd like to think about is this something we should really talk about? Is this something that makes sense to think about? Should it be something that we can consider? Perhaps this is something that is beyond our ability to comprehend, and as such is not something we should consider. The Gemara in Brachos, this is your first makor on your sheets, says, Kol anaviim kulan lo nisnavu ela limos hamashiach, avali olam haba ayin lo rasa lo kimzu lasecha. All of the prophets prophesied about Yemos HaMashiach. When we look at the books of the prophets, Yirmiyahu, Yeshayahu, Yechezkel, even the Torah itself, and Parshas Nitzavim and the like, they discuss Yemos HaMashiach, what is going to be after the Mashiach comes. But Olam Haba, only God has seen that. This is something that is not discussed, at least explicitly, in the Torah Shebichtav. And this, in fact, is a very, very important question, a question we'll turn to at the end of this year, why it's not discussed. But on the most basic level, the reason is because it's something that we can't understand. And this is the second source, the Rambam. The Rambam writes, V'kama kame David v'hisave l'chayolam haba. How much did King David long for olam haba? Shenemar, lulei hamanti l'ros betuv Hashem be'eretz chayim. A human being is incapable of understanding Olam Haba. We live in this world. This world is a physical world. We have a physical body. And we're not capable of understanding the notion of an entirely spiritual existence, of spiritual pleasure and the like. And therefore, it's not something that we can really understand or relate to. V'shekola tovo shemisnavim b'hama neviim liYisrael einan ela l'dvarim shebeguf shenenin ban Yisrael yimos haMashiach bezman shetashuv hamemshala liYisrael. Aval tovas chay olam haba ein la erech v'lo dimyon. When it comes to olam haba, there is nothing by which we can compare it to. There's no point of reference. It is something beyond our comprehension. V'lo dimua neviim, Kedei shelo yifchasu osa b'dimyon. The Nevi'im didn't even offer a comparison, an analogy, a mushal, a metaphor, simply because any comparison that would have been offered would have been mafchis, would have taken away from it. And therefore, even discussing it takes away from what it really is. And if that's the case, so then we have to wonder, perhaps we should end this year a little bit early and go home, or maybe start the sugya of Hanukkah a little bit earlier. Why is it that this is something we would talk about? Why is it that this is something we could think about? The Ramban goes even further. In the next source, in the Torah HaAdam, he writes that Shehayidia he has chus ba'atzmo. Were we to actually understand what Olam Haba is, we would actually be there. In other words, you can't understand it unless you're there. So is this something we should talk about? Is this something we could think about? A lot of times people have the conception that Judaism, perhaps as opposed to other religions, is a this-worldly religion. It's not an otherworldly religion. And this isn't something that we need to consider. We'll talk about that a little more at the end. But even though the Ramban says that this is something we can't understand, we can't relate to, he nevertheless felt it was important enough to discuss, to the extent that he wrote a whole book about it. The Shar HaGmul, which is found at the end of Tarsa Adam, from which this quote is taken, is a work that is dedicated not just to Olam Haba, but Gmul, reward in general. So obviously the Ramban felt that even though this is something that we can't fully understand and certainly can't appreciate, but it's still something that we should consider and we should try to understand to the extent that that is possible. Why? On one level, it serves as a motivation. The Michtav Meliyahu in the next source points out that many great people have imagined Olam Haba and used that as a source of inspiration. Surely, at times when we struggle, when we are torn, should we do that which is right or that which is wrong? Thinking about Olam Haba or Gehenim or whatever it is might serve as a motivating factor to help push us to do that which is right. However, I believe that it really goes much deeper than that. The Mishnah, in the first Mishnah in Perek HaChelek, in the 10th chapter of Sanhedrin, says the following. The last chapter of Sanhedrin is a chapter which is almost entirely Agadita and spends a lot of time discussing these topics, Olam Haba, Mashiach. And the Mishnah begins, Kol Yisrael yesh lam chelek li'olam haba. All Jewish people have a portion in the world to come. This is source 5 on your source sheets. Shenemar, Ve'amech kulam tzadikim liolam yirshu aretz neitzer mata'ai masei adai lehispayer. Interestingly enough, and this is something that if we had more time we could consider, but for the time being I'll just point out, the proof text is fascinating. It says liolam yirshu aretz. Olam Haba, according to Chazal, is frequently referenced in Tanakh with words like aretz, adama, leman yirbu yimeichem v'yimei v'neichem al ha'adama. Here we see it as a reference to eternity, to Olam Haba, because it says, li'olam yirshu aretz, li'olam, forever. Eternal life is Olam Haba. And for now, that is the most basic definition that we're going to offer. As we go on, we will explain further what exactly we mean by Olam Haba. However, the Mishnah doesn't stop here. Perhaps the song stops here. But the Mishnah continues. The Mishnah says, "Ve'elu she'en lahem chelek l'olam haba." The following are the people who do not have a chelek in olam haba. The term chelek is also interesting. It relates to that idea of land, a parcel, a portion, a chelek in the aretz, a chelek in olam haba. So while the Mishnah starts off with everyone has a chelek l'olam haba, it continues and says there are those that do not. This too is fascinating because the phraseology is extraordinarily awkward. one would have expected the Mishnah to say, everyone has a chelek li olam haba, chutz mi, X, Y, and Z. If there are exceptions, generally speaking, the way exceptions are presented are as chutz. Here it just says, everybody has a chelek li olam haba, these people don't. It's presented almost as a contradiction. This is something that the Gemara deals with. Reb Tzadok has a whole work devoted to this topic, Takanas HaShavim, and perhaps later on we'll get to some of his ideas. So who is the first in the list of people who don't have a chelek in Olam Haba? The Mishnah says, Ha'omer ein tchiyas ha-mesim min ha-Torah. Someone who denies the resurrection, someone who denies tchiyas ha-mesim. Why is it that this is so? Why is denial of tchiyas ha-mesim a sin which is so horrific that it warrants no chelek in Olam Haba? It seems very strange. I certainly would not have put it on the top of my list. And the Gemara itself asks that question and answers, Hu kafar ba, lefikach lo yia lo chelek ba. He denied it, and therefore he does not have a portion in it. What does that mean? If he denied tchiyas ha-mesim, how does he deny Olam Haba? So the simple understanding of this Mishnah supports the mainstream position, the position that we'll refer to today as the Ramban's position, that Olam Haba is the existence that follows Tchiyas HaMesim. As opposed to the Rambam's position, the Rambam maintains that Olam Haba is an entirely spiritual existence. It's something that does not have any correlation to this world. And therefore, Tchiyas HaMesim is not associated with Olam Haba. According to the Ramban and the simple reading of this Gemara, Tchiyas HaMesim is indeed correlated with Olam Haba. And thus, the Mishnah says, "Hu kafar ba, lefikach lo yeh lo chelek ba." By denying Tchiyas HaMesim, he's denying Olam Haba. And by denying Olam Haba, he has no part in it. Tit for tat. Mida keneged mida. But we still have to ask, why is it so bad to deny Olam Haba? And I think we could give a number of answers. The most basic is the following. Someone who denies Olam Haba denies that there is any justice, denies that God is a just God, because we live in a world in which there isn't justice. Tzadik v'ralo, rasha v'tovlo, innocent people suffer, righteous people are sick. And someone who is to deny Olam Haba, the Gemara says, essentially denies divine justice. They're essentially saying that all there is this world. And if all there is this world, if there's nothing more than our 70 or 80 or 90 or 100 years that we exist here on the physical earth, then there isn't going to be justice. And thus, denial of Olam Haba is not just denying an abstract concept, but it's denying justice. Thus, the Rambam, of course, in his 13 Principles of Faith, Yud Gimel Ikar Yamuna, lists not just denial of Tchiyas HaMesim as a violation of the Yud Gimel Ikar Yamuna, but also denial of Schar Va'onesh. What this Mishnah also tells us, and that is probably the reason, or one of the reasons, why Tchiyas HaMesim is in fact a bracha in Shmon Esrei, v'ne'man ata l'chayos mesim, is that this is something that we do have to know about. Perhaps the details are unimportant. Perhaps the specifics are something that we can't understand, but the very basic concept of Olam Haba, of there being some type of schar v'onesh, that is something that's essential to know, to understand, to believe in, to the extent that someone who denies it, ein lo chelek li'olam haba. So, the question then is, what is it? The first point I would like to make, and if you turn to source 9 on page 3, is the idea that olam haba, and generally speaking, reward, is primarily natural. It's not something which is artificial. It's not something which is external. It is something which is the natural result of doing good and being good. When we raise our children, so when we can, I could tell my daughters, I want you to clean your room, and if you clean your room, you'll get a lollipop. So in that case, there's no real or true connection between the reward that they're receiving and the work that they did. They're totally unrelated, except that this is something that I'm using to motivate them to do something that I want, or I think that they should want, or I think that they should do. Likewise, when it comes to consequences, you could have a natural consequence. I could say that, well, if your room isn't clean and it's messy, so then you won't be able to find your homework and you won't be able to find your clothing and you won't be able to find your toys. Or I could make up an artificial consequence. I could say that if you don't clean up your room, you won't get dessert. So for the most part, when we talk about Olam Haba, and later on we'll talk a little bit about Gehenim and the like, we refer to natural consequences as opposed to artificial consequences. There is a natural connection between that which we do and the nature of our eternal existence. To the extent that we perfect ourselves on this world, we improve ourselves on this world, we work hard to do that which is right, so that will naturally affect our souls and allow us to experience eternity in a different way than had we made low-level choices. Now, this idea, this concept, is one which is presented very differently in different thinkers. If you look, for example, in the Rambam presents naturalistic reward by focusing on the intellectual achievements. The intellectual achievements that a person attains in this world through the Chachma and the Torah and the philosophy that they learn and study and understand, that allows them to be able to understand and relate to eternal truths and thereby enjoy Olam Haba in a way that someone who did not perfect themselves spiritually and intellectually would. The Rambam doesn't exclusively focus on the intellect, but that is a strong theme when he discusses this. But this is an idea that everybody agrees to. Olam Haba, as we mentioned before, whether or not you have a physical body, is certainly a spiritual existence. To the extent that a person improves and perfects themselves spiritually on this world, they allow their spiritual side to dominate over their physical side. They do what's right, even though sometimes it comes at the expense of that which is physically pleasurable. So to that extent, they will have prepared themselves for the eternal existence that is Olam Haba. While the Rambam may focus on the intellectual achievements, the Nefesh HaChaim presents a more mystical presentation of this very same concept. He derives it from a pasuk in Iov, which says, Ki poel adam yishalim lo, which means that a person is paid, is rewarded based on his actions, but in a natural way. The term that Chazal frequently uses, adam bona beis olamo, you build your own house. In fact, the Nefesh HaChaim derives this from the phraseology of the Mishnah that we just mentioned a couple of minutes ago. The Mishnah says, Kol Yisrael yesh lam chelek le'olam haba. He asks, why doesn't it say, Kol Yisrael yesh lam chelek be'olam haba? That's what one would have expected. There's this thing called Olam Haba, and everybody has a portion in Olam Haba. And says the Nefesh HaChaim, no. What is the idea? The idea is that everybody has a portion le'olam haba, meaning to say you build your olam haba. You create it. It doesn't just exist and you get to go there. But rather it's the person, through their actions, through their behavior, through the choices that they make, that they create their very own olam haba. Le'olam haba. He writes in the underlying text, a couple lines down, V'zehu inyan schar ha'olam haba, shehu ma'aseh yidei ha'adam atzmo. It is the handiwork of the person, she'achar predas nafsho me'aguf, such that after the soul separates from the body, After all, what is death other than separation of the soul from the body? As long as we are alive, we are a composite of our soul and our body. Death is the separation. Our body is buried. It deteriorates. But our soul continues to exist. And what happens after this takes place? Hu ha'olel his aden ulahasbia lat nafsho betzach tzuchos ha'oros va'kochos va'olamos hakadoshim shenitosvu v'nisrabu mimasav hatovim. The Nefesh HaChaim, a major theme of the work, this is also something that's very difficult for us to understand, is the notion that through the actions that we do, we are bone olamos, we create worlds in the event that the actions are good. And should we choose to do that which is wrong, we are machriv olamos, or we create olamos shel tuma. Ein lanu esek benistaros, and this is certainly not the venue where we could fully try to explain the idea, but the basic idea is something that, that we could relate to. Skipping to the bold text, v'lo ol amru ba'olam haba, shemashme'o haya sheha'olam haba muchan me'es habriya, inyan v'davar le'atzmo, v'im yitzdak ha'adam yitnu lo b'scharo chelek mimenu. Aval ha'emes sheha'olam haba hu ma'aseh yedei ha'adam atzmo, shehirchiv v'hosif v'yiskin chelek li'atzmo mimasav, l'kol echad shekol Yisrael yesh lam chelek echad, chelek ha'kedusha v'oros v'atzach tzuchus, shehiskin v'hosif l'olam haba mimasav ha'tovim. Unbelievable. And likewise, the Nefesh HaChaim continues, the same thing is true with the reverse, skipping to the next bolded section. V'chein onesh ha'gehenim inyano kein shachet atzmo hu ansho. We don't need a separate gehenim. The sin itself is the punishment. The Nefesh HaChaim explains that when a person sins, they create a gehenim that surrounds them even as they're alive. Perhaps we don't perceive it because we're not able to perceive subtle spiritual forces when we're in our physical bodies. But the gehenim that we think about as a post-death experience is something that exists now, is created as we sin, and in fact even surrounds us. Now we should note, as explicated in Source 10 on page 4, that when we talk about gehenim, Gehenim, too, is a gift. It might be something that is horrifically painful. However, it, too, is a gift. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is kulo tov. He is a meitiv. Everything that he does is in order to bestow goodness to us and to the world. He lacks nothing, and therefore his only conceivable motivation, the Ramchal explains, is to be meitiv. And Gehenim too is a gift. In what sense is Gehenim a gift? Gehenim is a gift because, as it says here, lo bederech nekima chas v'shalom. It's not a form of revenge. Rak letovasa lezakeka ulezachecha lehaneshama elyona hazos ulehashiva liyamei ne'ureha ve'achar titaher lachazos b'noam Hashem ule'or b'or achayim. The purpose of Gehenim is that the soul becomes tainted while on this world when it's involved in that which is wrong, in that which is evil. And Gehenim is a process which purifies the soul and prepares it for the eternal existence that is Gan Eden and Olam Haba and the like. And thus this too is a gift. It's not necessarily a gift that we are so excited to receive, but in the big picture, it's something that benefits us. We've been focusing on the concept of natural reward versus artificial reward. There is a school of thought, which is fascinating, something to consider, that maintains that there are both components. There's both natural and perhaps artificial reward that's associated with Olam Haba. This relates to actually a fascinating topic pertaining to the parsha that we just read. Parshas Toldos, can you sell your Olam Haba? In fact, many Chazal understand that the selling of the Bechorah was in fact a selling of Olam Haba. Perhaps we'll talk about that a little later. Can you? Well, if it's naturalistic reward, presumably not. If it's some type of artificial reward, then perhaps yes. If there are both, perhaps there's something you could sell, there's something you can't. How does somebody understand Yisachar Zvulun relationships? Is someone who supports Torah, do they simply get the reward for supporting Torah? Or is it as though they learn Torah? This is a very big discussion. It's a fascinating discussion which very much relates to our current question, but one which we don't have time to address today. So far we've talked about whether or not we should consider what Olam Haba is. We've talked about the idea that Olam Haba is a natural reward, but we haven't yet said what it is. And as I alluded to earlier, there are two basic positions. The position of the Ramban, this is the position that is implied by Chazal in many places. We saw an example of that earlier when we saw the first Mishnah in Parak HaChelek. Kol Yisrael yesh lam chelom kol ba chutz haomer ein ches emes min haTorah ein lo chelak hu kafer ba lefikach lo yelo chelak bo. It is also, generally speaking, the position that those who had the mystical tradition take. And that is the idea that when a person dies, they exist in a purely spiritual sense. As we said before, the soul separates from the body, and the soul continues to exist in what is known as the Olam HaNeshamos, the world of the souls. The world of the souls includes Gehenim and Gan Eden, and it is an entirely spiritual existence. At a certain point in time on this world, we hope very soon the Mashiach comes and we will all go to Eretz Yisrael, the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, and so on and so forth. But Yemos HaMashiach, as we alluded to earlier, is fundamentally a this-worldly experience. Meaning to say that Yemos HaMashiach is not like Olam Haba. Olam Haba is an otherworldly experience. Yemos HaMashiach takes place on this world. According to the Rambam, there is not going to even be changes in nature. Ein bein Yemos Olam Hazeh liYemos HaMashiach el Shibud Malchios Bilvad. So Yemos HaMashiach is a time that we will exist to a certain degree like we exist at present in this world, according to the Rambam. It's going to be a time of universal peace. It's going to be a time of prosperity. It's going to be a time where we return to our former glory, where the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, where we have time to study Torah and wisdom and do mitzvos without experiencing the persecution and the suffering that we experience at present. However, fundamentally, it is a this-worldly experience. So while those who have died exist in the Olam HaNeshamos, those who are alive continue to exist in this world, B'Yemos HaMashiach. At a certain point in time, some sources say 1,000 years, at a certain point in time, the world will be destroyed, and there's going to be what's known as the Yom HaGadol V'Hanora, a concept which appears many places in Tanakh, a day of awesome judgment, and that will usher in the period of Olam Haba. Olam Haba begins with Tchias HaMesim, the resurrection, the notion that, thank you so much, the notion that those who have died will once again come back to life. And that will bring in the period of Olam Haba. Olam Haba is a spiritual existence. Everybody agrees that it is a spiritual existence. As the Gemara says, Lo Ochlin, the Lo Shosin, El Nehenin Miziv HaShchina. It's not a time of eating or drinking, but it's a time of spiritual pleasure in which a person enjoys the radiance of God's glory. This is the idea that we mentioned at the onset that we can't really understand, we can't really relate to. And in fact, a very obvious question can be asked. If it is the case that this is an entirely spiritual existence, then what need is there for the body? Why is it that Olam Haba is preceded with Tchiyas HaMesim? What is the purpose of Tchiyas HaMesim? Why do we need a physical body? Why must we be restored with our physical body? And in fact, it is this very question that led the Rambam to posit that there is no physical body in Olam Haba. Why is there a need for a physical body? If Chazal tell us, lo ochlin velo shosin, it must be that there is no physical body. That is the basis for the Rambam's position. The answer to this question is, to a large degree, something which we can't understand. It relates to deep mystical secrets, we're told. But to the extent that we can't understand it, it is based off of the idea that we, when we speak of we, when I speak of myself, when I think of myself, I don't just think of myself as a soul. I think of myself as I experience myself, which is a composite of a body and a soul who work together and cause me to make the decisions that I make. And thus, for eternity, there has to be a reuniting of the body and the soul. Perhaps, if we have time, we'll look at some of the sources that try to explain why this has to be the case. But that is the general perception of Olam Haba according to the Ramban's perspective. There are those who argue, like the Ritva, that there's going to be two resurrections, one resurrection of the righteous, which will take place during Yemos HaMashiach and allow them to experience the Messianic times, and one that takes place for everybody afterwards, preceding Olam Haba. But this is the basic theory. So what is Gan Eden? Gan Eden, according to the Ramban, is something that is different than Olam Haba. As we said before, Gan Eden is part of the Olam HaNeshamos. It's part of the spiritual existence, entirely spiritual existence, that a person enjoys after they die, prior to Tchiyas HaMesim, prior to Olam Haba. Now, one point that the Ramban makes, though he says that he definitively disagrees with the Rambam's notion that there is no physical body in Olam Haba, he says that to a large degree there is convergence between the two perspectives, because after all, everybody agrees that Olam Haba is entirely spiritual. There's no position that says that Olam Haba in any sense relates to physical pleasures. It's not a time of eating or drinking, whether it's Olam Haba, whether it's Gan Eden, whether you think those two existences are the same, and whether you say that they are different. It's something which is entirely spiritual and, to a large degree, natural. According to the Ramban, on page 5, we won't have time to read it together, Gan Eden is a place of incredible apprehension of God. It's a place where a person can come to a higher understanding of the truth, a understanding and an apprehension of God in a way that they can't while on this world. And this is something which is associated with the greatest possible pleasure. Meaning to say, understanding the truth and closeness to God is a type of pleasure to which no physical pleasure can be compared to. I'd like to read with you for a couple of minutes from the Rambam's position, the Rambam's perspective, and this could be found in your source books on page 7, source 13. The Rambam begins, Hatova hatzefuna letzadikim hi chaye olam haba vehi achayim she'en maves imahen vehatova she'en imara. The goodness that is held for those that are righteous is olam haba, and this is an eternal existence. It's life which entails no death, goodness which entails no ra. Hu shekasuv b'torah leman yitavlach v'harachta yamim. Mipi ha-shmua lamdu leman yitavlach le'olam shekulo tov v'harachta yamim le'olam shekulo aroch. V'zeu olam haba. So olam haba is eternal existence, it's life without death, and as we said, entirely spiritual. The Rambam continues, Ha'olam haba, ein bo guf v'gviya, there's no physical body, el nefashos ha-tzadikim bilvad, below guf, kemalachei ha-sharei. Simply their souls existing in an entirely non-spiritual way, much like the existence of angels. Ha'il v'ein bo gviyos, ein bo lo achila v'lo shtiya v'lo davar mikol advarim shegufos b'nei adam tzrichen lahen. Since there is no body, there's no need for eating or drinking or the other physical needs that a person needs on this world. V'lo yera davar min advarim shema'arim l'guvos ba'olam hazeh kegon yeshiva v'amida v'sheina u'misa v'etzem v'schok u'kiyotzi b'han. Thus, the soul does not exist and have the physical needs like standing or sitting or even emotions like happiness and sadness. Kach amru chachamim harishonim, ha'olam haba, ein bo lo achila v'lo shtia v'lo tashmish, ela tzadikim yoshvin v'itrosen b'roshen v'nenen meziv hashchina. Chazal depicted olam haba as an existence in which the righteous sit with the crowns on their head and bask in the glory of the Shechina. Harei nisbar lecha she'ein sham guf, lefi she'ein sham achila v'shtia. What does it mean when they say that the tzaddikim sit? That is a parable. Obviously, you can't sit if you don't have a body. Rather, kilomar ha-tzaddikim mitzuyin sham b'lo amel u'v'lo yagia. Just as sitting is a relaxing position, so too the existence in olam haba is one which lacks any type of toil. What did they mean when they said that they have the crowns on their head? Kilomar das sheyadu, the knowledge that they acquired, shebiglala zachu l'chaye olam haba mitzuyin imahen. That knowledge that they acquired in this world stays with them. The intellectual accomplishments, the spiritual accomplishments that a person garners while in this world remain attached to the person and define the person in their existence after death. In Perek Tes, which is on page 10, the Rambam continues. Me'achar shenoda shematan scharen shel mitzvos v'atova shenizkela im shamarnu derech Hashem ha'kosev b'torah hi chayei olam haba. If it is the case that the goodness, that the reward, is that of olam haba, then there's a very, very troubling concept that arises, which is why is it that when we look in Torah, when we look in Chumash, we always see descriptions of physical reward and punishment. In b'chukosai teilechu, ves mitzvosai tishmeru, what happens? V'nasati gishmechem v'itam, v'nasna ha'aretz yivula, v'etza sadei ten piryo. If you do that which is right, the Torah says we're guaranteed peace, prosperity, rain, bounty, and if we do that which is wrong, we will suffer famine and blight and war. Why is it that the Torah always focuses on physical rewards and physical punishments, if after all, the true reward is entirely spiritual? And the Rambam responds that the reward which is explicated in the Torah is not actually meant to be reward. It's not reward at all. What the Torah means to say is that if you do that which is right, I will give you the opportunity to do more of that which is right. I will make it easy for you. If you learn Torah, I'll give you the opportunity to study Torah in peace. And if you don't, if you don't take advantage of the goodness and the gifts that God gives us, you don't use them as a means to pursue that which is right and just and spiritual, then I will take away those opportunities. You're not using my gifts for that which is right, so then I will take away those opportunities. So that does not mean to say that this is reward. It's not reward. It's simply that if you take advantage of the gifts and the blessings, at least on a national level. We also have to remember that the physical gifts that are promised in the Torah are collective. They're not for the individual. But if you, as a collective body, as a nation, do that which is right, then you'll have more opportunity to do that which is right, and more opportunity to, as it were, earn Olam Haba. But if you don't, then that will be taken away from you. So don't interpret the rewards that are depicted in the Chumash as actual rewards. They are simply the opportunities to do better. In Hilchos Malachim, Perek Yud Aleph, which can be found, again, we don't have a chance to read through all of this together. However, you have it here, you could take it home, and by all means, you can recommend studying it. It's very, very powerful. The Rambam writes, which is here on page 13 in your source book, the Rambam describes the nature of existence during the time of Mashiach. Hamelach HaMashiach asid la'amod ulahachzir malchus David liyoshna lememshala harishona uvone hamikdash umekabetz nidchei Yisrael v'chozrin kol hamishpatim biyamav kishahayu mikodem. So messianic times are when the Davidic dynasty will be restored, Jerusalem and the temple will be rebuilt, and we will be restored and go beyond that which was our former glory. Kol mi she'eno ma'amin bo, o mi she'eno mechakeh lebiyaso. Just like we saw earlier, that denial of Olam Haba is a violation of one of the principles of Emunah, so too, denial of Yemos HaMashiach. In fact, the Rambam adds here a fascinating twist. He doesn't just say that someone who denies Mashiach is a heretic, but he says someone who denies Mashiach or does not long for it, does not await it, which is another fascinating point, one which perhaps we could discuss another time. Now, we're not going to have time today to talk about Yemos HaMashiach, but when you read these Rambams, you will see what I was referring to earlier, that Yemos HaMashiach is fundamentally a this-worldly experience. It's fundamentally a Olam HaZeh type of existence, as opposed to Olam Haba. Whether you take the Ramban's approach or whether you take the Rambam's approach, it's an entirely spiritual existence. And this is true, by the way, whether you follow the approach that Yemos HaMashiach will entail major changes and miracles, or whether you take the Rambam's approach that Yemos HaMashiach will continue existence as we know it, just in under much better circumstances. In the remaining minutes, I'd like to consider with you some of the answers given to the question that we raised earlier. The question was, why is it that if Olam Haba is a fundamental belief of Judaism, is it not mentioned more explicitly in Tanakh, in the Tarsha Bechtav? So first of all, before we answer that question, we should note that it is not mentioned explicitly, but it is certainly assumed in many places. It is taken for granted. The Pasuk, for example, says that hikares tikares avonaba, that among the most severe types of sins, the punishment is kares. And Chazal understand there are multiple levels of kares, as the Ramban points out, three primary levels. But hikares tikares means hikares b'olam hazeh, tikares l'olam haba. Kares, in its most extreme manifestation, means, as the Rambam explains, that when a person dies, they cease to exist. The Torah tells you that what is the worst punishment you could get? What is it that if you are evil in the most egregious of ways, how will you be punished? You will be punished with kares. That your soul will not exist after you die, according to the Rambam. In fact, the Rambam writes that this is the worst conceivable punishment, even worse than Gehenim. Gehenim is something which at least we continue to exist following our death. At least there's hope for us. We can be restored. We could be repaired. Gehenim, like we said before, is an opportunity. It's a gift. But according to the Rambam, the worst conceivable punishment is kares, is excision, is the notion that when a soul, when the body dies, the soul also dies. There is no life after death. Now, if the Torah goes ahead and states that the worst punishment is that your soul does not continue to exist following your death, then the Torah is certainly assuming that, generally speaking, there is existence after death. And that is Olam Haba on its most basic level, is the notion of the Nitzchias HaNeshama, the eternality of the soul. There are many psukim, Tehei, Nishmas Adoni, Tzrura, B'tzur HaChayim, in which the psukim relate to the existence and the life of the soul even after death. Chazal and Perek HaChelek have many allusions, and the Rishonim, Rav Sadia Gaon and others, highlight many places where it is implicit in Tanakh that there is such a thing as Olam Haba. But still, we might wonder, why is it not more clear? Why is it not more explicit? The first approach that we can highlight is that taken by Rav Sadia Gaon, Sefer Emunos V'Deos, the Ramban, and others. And that is that the notion of Olam Haba is obvious. It goes without saying. Why would anybody have imagined that when their physical body dies, that their soul would cease to exist? Death, deterioration, is a property of a physical existence. And once we presume that there is more to us than our physical body, that we have a soul, so then it's axiomatic. There's no reason to assume that that would cease to exist after death. Why would it be that just because the body separates from the soul, that the soul continues to exist? The Ramban actually says that's why the Torah has to mention kares, because that's surprising. Olam Haba, the notion that our soul outlives us, continues to exist after our life, is something that's obvious. And certainly, when you add the idea that we said before, that without existence after death, without Olam Haba, then this is a universe without justice. And if Hashem is Tov Yashar, so then obviously there must be existence that extends beyond our life on this physical world. And that is the first answer. The first answer is it's obvious. It need not be stated. As the Ramban says, physical rewards for spiritual mitzvot, that is surprising. That's something that the Torah has to say. But spiritual existence, that's something that's pasha, that's obvious. The second answer is one which the Rambam writes, and we're going to talk about it in just a couple minutes. We'll close with this, and that is one of motivation. The third one, which the Rambam writes as well as the Ibn Ezra, is the idea that the Torah, generally speaking, refrains from discussing abstract intellectual matters. It's something that we can't quite relate to, as we started this year by noting that we don't have any clue what Olam Haba is. We can't relate to it. We can't understand it. The Torah discusses things that can be understood. The Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim adds a historical twist to it. He says that, specifically, the Jews leaving Egypt, who were used to the slave mentality, who were rather unsophisticated spiritually, so telling them about Olam Haba is not something that would have excited them. If you told them about physical rewards, so that's something that, for them, coming out of a life of slavery, is something that might have motivated them, may have excited them. Olam Haba might have scared them. So that's a historical reason based on a similar idea. That's why the Rambam suggests that as the later prophets do indeed deal more explicitly with these types of notions of Tchias HaMesim and Olam Haba and the like, because they were delivered at a point in time where people were more capable and suitable and sophisticated and able to deal with these types of issues. Another approach, fascinating idea, offered by the Ran, is that the Torah promises only controvertible promises. Just imagine, if I was starting a religion, so what would I do? So first of all, I would tell you that I was a prophet. And I received all these things from prophecy, because nobody, assuming that the rest of you here aren't prophets, so you'll have to believe me and believe everything I said. And then you know what I'm going to tell you? I'll tell you, well, if you do that which is right, I can guarantee you eternal bliss. And if you do that which is wrong, you're all going to go to hell. Because, again, nobody's ever been there. It's not controvertible. You can't question it, because who is there to contradict me? So what does the Torah do? The Torah takes the opposite approach. God appears to us through national prophecy, mass revelation at Sinai, and he promises us rewards and punishments of this world. Parshas Bechukosai, Parshas Kisavu, these are things that are verifiable and that only someone who has it within his power to fulfill is able to pledge. Another approach given by the Maharal and others is that focusing on Olam Haba is a distraction. While we certainly believe in Olam Haba with absolute conviction, but it's not something that we should spend too much time thinking about. We are here on this world to focus on Olam Hazeh, to become better people, to become more caring people and giving people, to study Torah and wisdom and the like. And focusing on the afterlife, focusing on otherworldly existences, this can prove a distraction from our chief and principal focus, which is, of course, this world. The Gra has a fascinating notion. The Kuzari as well stresses this. And he points out that when the Torah does indeed promise things, it doesn't just mean physical rewards. If we look at Parshas Bechukosai, until now we've been assuming that that's only about physical rewards and prosperity. But if you read the Pesukim carefully, that the rewards, the promises of Parshas Bechukosai go well beyond that. V'nasati mishkani besochechem, v'lo sig'al nafshi yaschem, v'hisalachti besochechem, v'hayisi lachem le'lohim, v'atem tiyuli la'am. What do those psukim mean? I will walk with you, God says. I will be a God for you. I will dwell. My presence will be with you. These are not physical promises and rewards. These are spiritual ideas. We're nearly out of time, so we'll conclude with the following thought. And that is the question of motivation. Take a look at the Rambam on page 24. After all this talk of Olam Haba, we might wonder, should that be what motivates us to do that which is right and to do that which is good? The Rambam writes, Al yomar adam hareini oseh mitzvos haTorah v'osek b'chachmasa kedei she'akabel kol habrachos haksuvos ba o kedei she'ezkeh le'olam haba. A person should not say, I'm going to do that which is right in order to get Olam Haba. According to the Rambam, this is what Chazal call Ovde Mesarav Amenas Lekabel Pras. Just like it's obvious that ideally a person shouldn't be motivated by physical rewards and physical pleasures, so too they shouldn't be motivated by spiritual rewards and spiritual pleasures. So what is it that should motivate us? The Rambam writes in the next halacha that we should be motivated by love. Ha'oved me'ava osik b'torah u'mitzvos v'holech b'nesivos ha'chachma lo mipnei davar ba'olam v'lo mipnei yiras hara v'lo kedei lireish hatova ela ose ha'emes mipnei shehu emes v'sof hatova lavo biglala. A person should do that which is right because it's right. A person should do that which is good because it's good. A person should seek the truth because it's true. That should be our motivation. That's what loving God is all about. Love means I do something not for myself, but for something else, for someone else. And that is what should motivate the person. Reb Tzadok Mikoyn of Lublin points out a fascinating idea. The Rambam before noted, Kama kame David li olam haba. How much did King David long for olam haba? Well, 1 second. Doesn't it say that that should not be our motivation? So he distinguishes between two types of longing for olam haba. If someone does Torah and mitzvot, does which is right, because they want reward, the pleasure of olam haba, so that is not ideal. However, someone who wants olam haba because that is a place of closeness to God, of dveikus, of apprehending the truth, so then that is indeed noble and justified. If I want olam haba because I want to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's very different than saying I want olam haba because I want reward. We should note one other thing, however. Not everybody, certainly not me, is on this level. And as the Gemara says, mitoch shelo lishma ba lishma, a person must motivate themselves in a way that which works. And if thinking about olam haba is something that inspires a person and helps a person, then it's certainly something that they should do. As they grow, as they develop, perhaps they will reach higher and more truthful heights. But ultimately, that is something that is often necessary and a means by which we could get to a higher level. And finally, we said before that according to Chazal, the debate between Yaakov and Esav, what we're reading about in this week's Parsha and last week's Parsha, is about, as Rashi puts it, Nachla Shnei Olamim. They're arguing about Olam Hazeh versus Olam Haba. When Esav says, I don't need the Bechorah, he says, Hine anochi holech lamus, the lama zeliya Bechorah, what do I need it for? All that I need, I have here. It's all about this world. Olam haba, however it's defined and whatever it means, is the idea basic to Judaism that there is more than the here and now. There's more than that which we perceive. That was the central debate between Yaakov and Esav. And the idea that olam haba exists, that there's more than that which we perceive, there's more than that which we sense, there's more than that which we feel, that is what olam haba is, that is the truth, and that is indeed a fundamental principle of Judaism. May we all be zocha to see the brachos that we've been describing today, b'vias goel tzedek, b'mehera b'yameinu. Thank you very much.